welcome to Taking Stock, everyone. It's September 11th, 2024, and I'm really excited for this episode today. We're going to be joined by What Can I Make Today, a prolific user, predominantly on Reddit, who has developed a huge following, I'd say, for their ability to break down not only information about custody and DRS, but other emergent rule developments, proposal developments in the financial regulation space, including with some of the SROs that the SEC additionally manages. Not only are we going to be covering some of their work, but especially talking about the SEC petition process and a recent SEC petition that we've got together for regarding NSCC's closeout and settlement policies. That is, you know, it's fascinating what they can do right now. It's fascinating what they're asking to be able to do in the future. And it's especially exciting that retail has the opportunity to, you know, make some noise about this without needing to wait for an SEC-sanctioned comment window using that petition process. So without too much more intro, welcome. What Can I Make Today? Thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you, Chives. This is definitely an honor and my first podcast. So I love, you know, learning about how to do all this, get to know all of you people at YDRS. I know I've been following a number of you in the path that you've blazed. I know you, your team has basically done a ton towards ownership, which is quite impressive. And also, everything we learn about the stock market being very different from what we would kind of think and expect reminds me a lot about actually the intro to Big Short, right? Bunch of people just decided to look and things were different than what they seemed. So I'm very glad to be here. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to mention as well, we have John Wooten, you know, a longtime contributor now to YDRS, also here for the conversation. Yeah, thanks so much, John, for joining us as well.
Yeah, of course, Chives. Nice to meet you. Is it What Can or what do you prefer to go by?
What Can works. Can works.
Well, you certainly put together a really stellar proposal here on the petition we're talking about, and obviously a lot of prudence on your end bringing these ownership topics to the masses.
Yeah, it's really incredible work. And I'd love to hear, you know, kind of before we dive into the specifics, I couldn't agree with you more. First off, it is just like the intro in some ways to The Big Short, where, you know, curious people looked and then tenacious people decided to start trying to tell more folks about it and incite more curiosity. And here we are years later with a bit of an established presence. And thank you for the kind words, you know, regarding what we've been able to accomplish so far, but it's certainly just the tip of the iceberg as far as what we'd like to do. And so how did you kind of get started, if you want to give us a brief background? And in the meantime, I'm just going to be adding to the NESP and show notes here some links out to the petition resources so that folks can follow along later.
So unlike probably very few others, I got interested in this basically during what everyone now calls the sneeze, back when, you know, GameStop started their short squeeze a few years ago in January, 2021 now? And then when the buy button was shut off, I was like, what the heck? This has never happened before. And when you see something weird like that, and when I see something weird like that, I just start diving in, right? And admittedly, I first got into this thinking, I'll buy a few shares, make a few hundred dollars on the short squeeze, riding it back up before it, you know, inevitably ends. And then here I am in this rabbit hole going down and learning about our financial system. And it's been a bit of a journey since that time. You know, I know a lot of the community has basically learned about how our system works, right? How the options work, how the stock market work, the securities and the beneficial ownership versus, you know, the securities that are issued and actually owned, who has title to those shares. And it's been a journey for everyone, kind of going down different paths, which has been quite amazing. And I would say we're at a pretty amazing turning point right now, because the retail community, right, I would say has never paid attention to the rules, the regulations. We've been in the game, but we've never read the rule book. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
absolutely.
We get these snippets of how to play the game from our brokers, right? From the literature that they tell us, from Investopedia or other resources online. But we've never read the rules, ever. And we always thought, I mean, I've always thought that the rules were largely static, maybe some big changes here and there. And that's actually not true at all, right? And now that we're reading the rules as a community, and we try to find where all these bits and pieces are and put them together to understand our system, we also start seeing industry asking to change the rules for their benefit, right? And kudos to them, right? They know how to do so. And obviously, nobody's going to expect industry to ask for rules for someone else's benefit, right? I don't think any of us would have that expectation. You know, Adam Smith, right? Everyone's going to be incentivized to do what's best for them. So as a community, over time, we've seen industry ask for rules that benefit them and not others, or usually at the expense of others. And I know apes or retail have commented on these rules, right? Quite heavily in some cases, and finally getting a voice in this marketplace, which was silent for so many years. And I think that's very powerful, right? For the SEC to pay attention to voices from retail. I think that's huge. I know Gary Gensler has put out some requests for people to say, hey, tell us what's wrong. Tell us when you see things that could be changed. And for people to take time out of their day and say, hey, this looks wrong, this looks like it'd be changed, I think is pretty powerful. It's a force that has never existed in the market, as far as I know. And industry now has to pay attention to this new voice in the marketplace, right? And they don't know what we're going to be like, and I don't know that we know what we're going to be like. And I think that's amazing. I think that's very amazing. And even with the ownership questions on DRS, right? People are now figuring out, even transfer agents, I think, are now trying to figure out what it means to have directly registered shares. And I think even the SEC has at some point said, well, what does it mean to be directly registered, right? So there's definitely an evolution that's happening in our marketplace right now. And I think it's amazing that retail can be a part of it, and not just by commenting on things that industry wants, but now being able to figure out the process for petitioning the SEC for what we want, what retail would want. And I think that's very powerful.
Completely agree with you. It's beautifully said. You know, I think you're picking up on this, almost this evolution in the consciousness of of retail investors, whereas, you know, it was a kind of a hands-off thing for decades before this current moment. You know, folks might have had their stockbroker, like an individual, or maybe in more recent years, they're operating in a broker, but they're not really thinking about the broader implications of the market that they're participating in. And meanwhile, as you pointed out, all the time there are these huge financial organizations, these self-regulating organizations and otherwise, which, you know, they employ specialty lawyer firms of lawyers to interpret and to write different proposals, which are, you know, going to be, you know, naturally dense and difficult to parse for laypersons. And these are folks, you know, it's their job to do these things. And naturally, it's their job because it's, you know, they're building these systems or trying to incentivize change in these systems to further their own capitalist aim, as we would expect them to. That's how our system works. And so, you know, slowly, retail is becoming more aware of not only its place in this broader system, but how it can leverage that place and its voice in order to incite some of its own change. And we've seen in the last couple of years since the sneeze, which when people refer to what happened to GameStop and other, you know, heavily traded retail interest stocks in January of 2021, that we've seen a surge in SEC comment submissions on proposals, on rule adjustments. We've seen a variety of different activist organizations crop up, not just ours, you know, but there are plenty of others that are seeking to, you know, increase the floor of this understanding. And now that brings us, I think, very cleanly into this idea of the SEC petition, where rather than waiting for a sanctioned clearance to comment on some very specific change, we actually have the ability, there is a process allotted to us in the books to suggest something direct and specific without needing to wait for it to come up under some kind of review or other update. And that's what's really going to allow, I think, for retail to start throwing its weight around in the market in a regulatory capacity. And that's not even to say, I think, just to wrap up, that's not even to draw attention to this incredible amount of scrutiny now that all of these proposals are under. There are multiple communities of thousands and thousands of people who are looking over every new thing, who are preparing their comments, who are thinking about how it's going to impact the market space, how it impacts the retail sector. And this just did not exist before. You know, the other folks who were looking at proposals were other legal firms and other financial entities, other hedge funds. We're living in a completely different world, and I don't think there's ever any going back to the, you know, the zeitgeist information that retail had access to and experienced before.
That's right. We're in a whole new game now. One in which Wall Street industry, financial industry interests, right? They used to only have to worry about each other. Right. If a hedge fund maybe wants to change some rules, and an exchange maybe wants to have their interests respected, the number one group that never showed up was retail. And so over the past, I don't even know how long, retail interests could always be basically ignored because we didn't speak up. And now that we can speak up and have been speaking up, it's amazing. And I think there's power in the people who have been watching and reviewing. I can't even thank the number of people who raise the different new rules that come out and whatnot in these various communities. Because it is impossible, I think, for any one person to keep track of it all. So thank you to everybody in these communities who say, hey, there's a new rule. This looks fishy, or this looks good. It almost is never good, just in case you are wondering. Except recently with some of the new rules, now that we have to have our interests respected. I think it's amazing. The people that are doing this I mean, huge thank you to everyone who's keeping an eye out in all of the different places. And now we get to ask for changes to rules, right? Fairer marketplace rules. And I think that's pretty key. Because with this petition here, we have the NSCC rule that they're not even hiding it, right? It just says, we have a rule 22 to suspend rules, suspension of rules. And it, two paragraphs, we can waive, extend, throw out basically any rules we have. And it makes you wonder, and it says, well, can you imagine if you're playing football and your rule book says, let's say someone could just throw out the rule book anytime they want. Could you imagine a game, any sports game like that?
It sounds like Calvin Ball.
It's exactly Calvin Ball. And yet that's our market.
Now, maybe we can, I think we might have to take, let's take a quick step back and just make sure we've got the framework here. So I know that you'd mentioned, first off, that, you know, we touched on there's this route that individual investors are able to submit specific petitions. That's what the SEC calls them. But essentially, you know, we're soliciting as participants specific changes to specific rules that are under the SEC jurisdiction. And in this case, the example that you're bringing up, it has to do with the NSCC, which is one of the components of the DTCC, of course, the largest and most monopolistically powerful entity in the U.S. markets. They're a self-regulating organization, and but part of the SEC's purview is, you know, when they're trying to adjust their own rules for managing their own members, the SEC can step in and has some say over how those rules are built and organized. And so that's why, even though they are self-regulating, not part of any kind of government entity, the SEC still has power to dictate, you know, whether or not, you know, something like this, the Calvin Ball, as we were just discussing, you know, if that's really fair and equitable to all participants. And I just want to also mention, for those who might not know, the NSCC is their Securities Clearing Corporation, essentially responsible for the vast majority of settlement within the American markets. And so, you know, when we talk about adjustments to their rules, if they want to just, you know, if they have an obligation, for example, and this is what we'll get to in a moment specifically, but if they have an obligation to close out some position for some reason, but they also have the ability to ignore any rule on their books if they need to, well, then naturally, I suppose they don't actually have to close out that position if situation might have otherwise demanded it. Just by way of kind of overview, John and what can, do you think that's a good starting point for folks who might not have already been familiar with that sector of the market? And what else would we want to add to that before going into the specifics?
That's right. That's great. And so it's actually interesting because our markets, most of the markets that people are normally familiar, right? Like there's bonds, fixed income, mortgage-backed securities, which are right, the mortgages that kind of came up in Big Short. There's options, right? People trade options all the time, derivatives. And there's a clearing agency sort of for each of these major securities groups. So the FIC, F-I-C-C, is a Fixed Income Clearing Corporation. There's a National Securities Clearing Corporation, and they do the stocks that we typically think of buy and sell through our broker. There's Options Clearing Corporation, the OCC, and they'll clear the options trades. And there's also interplay between them, right? So like between, like when you have an options trade, well, you can exercise that and it becomes a stock trade. They kind of hand off the responsibility between these clearing agencies. So these clearing agencies kind of sit atop ensuring our markets, well, ensuring that everyone gets what's been paid for, right? They clear and settle trades for us. And it's, if you think about it, we can think of it like insurance on packages that you buy from Amazon or other internet retailers, right? Someone has to make sure that when you buy a stock, buy a product, it should arrive, right? And that's what these clearing agencies are, they're kind of the last line of defense to make good on that insurance. And this is one of the things that's insane about how DRS has become so important, because, well, we've been finding out that we don't always get receipt, right? We don't always receive the products that we've paid for. And that's why we're talking about these clearing agencies, because these liabilities keep building up. And there are rules for how liabilities should be handled. But there's also rules that say, well, it's kind of Calvin Ball. We don't have to deal with it that way. And I think that's insane. I think that's crazy.
Now, let's touch on this. You know, let's say that they, operate under this principle where maybe they don't want to follow or aren't able to follow for some reason. Let's say for market stability reasons, right? Maybe they aren't able to follow a traditional clearing policy. But I'm sure that one would hope at the very least that they would then need to provide some kind of written report detailing exactly what should have, what might have normally been done, what was done instead, the rationale for that change in action, and the parties responsible for discussing and then ultimately implementing that departure from a traditional action. That's what I might expect at the very least from an oversight body. However, unfortunately, that same disclosure process, as I understand it, does not exist for the NSCC, which is the clearing body, as you said, for stocks and securities. Is that right? Does that jive with your understanding of it as well?
That's the way I understand it. And this rule is only two paragraphs long. So the first paragraph says you can throw out the rule book. And the second paragraph says if you do, you do have to make a written report. But it doesn't have to go to everybody. And in fact, the number of people who have access to that report are very, very limited. And I think that's a problem, right? If only a very small subset of the market gets to know about issues in our market, I think that's unfair, right? And I think we should change that. At the very minimum, everybody should know, right? The SEC should know. The SEC is not actually on that list, which is also kind of funny.
Yeah. I almost have to laugh because there's an absurdity to it, that there's this gigantic super system, which is responsible for the successful clearing of, just a huge amount of equity, right? We're talking in the order of billions, not just of equity, but of individual trades, of successfully, internalized and rounded orders, just a ton of gained efficiency. There are positive things about having this kind of system, but what this represents, a broad reading of this rule, it represents the ability for this oversight body to essentially act with perhaps outside motives that may not be clear to anyone looking on from the outside, not only the what those motives are, what those rationales are, but even what actions were taken in the first place. And that really should not be tenable for so many individuals, not just in America, but around the world, that depend on the stock market in some way, whether or not it's through direct investment or through, investment through like a 401k or IRA, through their employer. I mean, this is people's pensions. This is a major problem if we have this incredible opacity present when it comes to how things actually function under the hood.
That's right. And to use the Calvin Ball example, right, there's no requirement that everyone follow the same rules. This waiver can be for anyone that they decide, right? The NSCC can just say, hey, you get a waiver, you don't. And if we're playing Calvin Ball here, Calvin could say that Hobbs gets the waiver, but Susie doesn't. Could be the exact same situation, right? On both Hobbs and Susie's end. But Calvin gets a decide. And that, to me, doesn't seem fair.
Right. It seems straightforward to think of a ton of examples and ways in which it might not be. Or, you know, Calvin and Hobbs, of course, they go way back. And Susie, she's got cooties. So naturally, there's going to be some different treatment there.
Exactly. And for an organization as important as our clearing agencies, for our financial markets, now, maybe I'm just naive, but I would have thought there's sort of predefined, set in stone processes that everyone follows. Right? Whether it be Hobbs, whether it be Susie, whether it be their parents, whoever, right? Same rules, same processes, same procedures, same regulations for everybody. Same timeline, same deadlines. But that's not the case, which is crazy to me.
Yeah, what we would want is, I mean, I don't think fairness and equity for participants in the market environment are unreasonable expectations. It's asking everyone to play fair is really a kind of baseline. You know, you should learn that in elementary school.
Well, everything I needed to know, I learned in kindergarten, right?
Yeah, why didn't I don't think they covered the NSCC in my kindergarten curriculum.
No, but they did cover fairness. And I think ultimately that's what it boils down to. Right? Fairness. Right? Is it fair for a publicly backed organization to be able to say rules get waived for one, but not another. And nobody else really gets to know about if and when the rules are waived. Or for what reasons the rules were waived.
Dan, that is exactly where this petition can kind of come in, I think. And we can speak a bit about the specific, I don't think loopholes is quite the right word for what we're talking about here, because it's not a loophole. It's just, following the line as written. And, they have these abilities, but they are overtly powerful and without oversight. There's a need to watch the watchman in this scenario, or at least to expect a public and thorough reporting on the decisions that they make. And so, through this ability for the public, and again, this is another example of a good type of fairness where retail is able to solicit petitions for specific items of change. And so through that process, you did a really incredible job here of pulling together, following the rules of laid out in the SEC petition FAQ and detailing the specific language that you identified as a problem, your rationale for identifying it as a problem, and then, of course, providing a variety of different suggestions that to act as a jumping off point for regulators to consider assessing whether or not a kind of adjustment or some kind of review process is necessary. So I just want to remind listeners again to check out these pages over on YDRS if you want to read along, but maybe we can hop right into that that proposal. And then I guess I should ask, you know, John, before we do, is there anything that you kind of wanted to add to the broader context before we hop into the specifics?
Yeah, in 1975, when Congress set up this whole national clearing and settlement system, it was written to promote competition. And yet today, we have just a few monopolies that really control the entire market. And I think it's unbelievable that they really don't take in the perspective of investors themselves. It was so abundantly ridiculous to see that the disclosures were sent to just about everybody on Wall Street except for the investors. And I believe that because there's no competition on the clearing and settlement side ever since the late 90s, they sort of bought everyone up, started failing to deliver shares, incurring all these problems when there was nobody there as an alternative that could actually provide effective, transparent, and systemic settlement. Makes me believe that we have a real opportunity here to disrupt the status quo and at least prompt them to innovate any way that they can by establishing this very important advocacy along with sort of opportunities to compete on the settlement level.
Yeah, that's a great addition, John. You know, it's really terrible when we can see so many examples, either in real time or downstream watching symptoms. You know, when competition evaporates and there's no effort made to limit the powers of a central controlling body and no effort made to regulate its behavior such that it can be, kind of continued protection for those that are using and depending on it. We end up in these bizarro land situations where it seems as though there's, just complete abject ability to do whatever they seem to desire, or at least it can be read that way. And we don't even know whether or not it's a power that's been abused. It's just it's just kind of an open question and an issue for retail to now deal with, which we're trying to do. And thanks so much again to Wokan for your effort on this. So let's hop in here to the petition itself.
So this petition is actually pretty simple. At its core, we want to get rid of the rule to throw out the rule book, right? I don't think we could ever allow for that in any sport, any other part of our lives, really. Right, you wouldn't find this in a soccer game or a football game or a basketball game where someone could just say, nope, rule book goes out the window. But the problem with throwing out the rule to throw out the rules is to look beyond and say, well, why does this exist? Right? Why do they have this rule to set aside any requirements that they put out for themselves? And what it boils down to really is market disruption, right? If one of the members, one of the clearing members, somehow fails and leaves behind a hot mess that the clearing agency has to deal with, and this hot mess, cleaning it up, is going to disrupt the market, the clearing agency wants the ability to say, hey, I'm going to take my time to do so, and I don't want to tell anybody about it. That's basically what it is. Now, of course, if someone knows that the clearing agency has this rule to take their time to clean up messes, you might find that someone's just going to go running around creating messes for someone else to clean up. And that's kind of what we ended up with, is we have certain market participants that can make a lot of money creating a mess for a clearing agency to clean up. And so then you have to fix that problem as part of fixing this rule to throw out the rules. And you have to disincentivize the people who are creating messes, right? And if part of creating messes is short-term profit, and then they run off, leaving the mess for other people to pay to clean up, then you have to make it less profitable for people to make a mess, right? And I think even most kindergartners would understand that, hey, if I could play with toys, just leave a mess for other teachers or other kids to clean up, they're going to do so, right? And that's what we have to change. And so the proposal is three parts. One, get rid of the ability to throw out the rule book. Two, make it more expensive for the people who create the messes. And, right, go after their executive compensation. Right? If the clearing member fails, why aren't their executives responsible? Right? Enron, it took forever to go after the executives to try and claw back compensation, right? And we've seen it over and over again where executives of a company will basically milk a company for all it's worth before it goes under and then leave everybody else with the bag, right? Have everybody else clean it up. So we should go after, and we can put it into the rules to go after the executives. So let's do so. And what's funny is these clearing agencies actually have what they call a loss allocation waterfall, right? This loss allocation waterfall says, well, if we're going to take losses because of someone's mess, here's the line that people are in paying it off, right? And at first, it starts off with the clearing member, right? But it doesn't include their executives. If the company goes under, that's it. They don't go after the executives. The company has a bunch of losses. The value of the company, whatever's left, goes to the clearing agency. And then rather hilariously, other clearing members become responsible. Right? You skip the executives altogether of the failed company. And so this is where I think, you know, some people have figured out, hey, I'm going to create a mess, walk away, and let everybody else clean it up, which, you know, seems like a terrible lesson from kindergarten. So here, three things, right? Let's get rid of the rule. Let's make it more expensive for the executives to do this, to create this mess and run away. And let's get rid of the discretion, right? Let's get rid of the option for clearing agencies to do this slowly or quickly. And let's make the level playing field. Everyone follows the same rules. And that's it. That's basically this petition. It's very simple, actually. Thankfully, this rule change was this rule was basically just two paragraphs and then a couple of other rules that they touch on. So it wasn't that much to read. And so it's a fairly simple proposal in the grand scheme of how complex our rule systems are. And I think most retail would understand and get behind something like this. Because we're tired of bailouts, right? We're tired of someone making a mess, leaving behind a super expensive cleanup, and then everyone else has to bail them out and pay for it, right? We already had that in 2008, and for some reason, in the past 15 years, give or take, we've never fixed it. I think it's time retail takes charge and gets in here and starts fixing it.
Yes, right there with you. Ooh. Absolutely. And thanks for laying that out. My gosh, I know. Yeah, and it's a crazy thing, right? I mean, we cannot know, of course, that there is some cabal of individuals who are intentionally drawing equity out of a company by doing things like organizing share buybacks or increasing issuance into their own pockets in the form of salary or stock option, and then dwindling things down and walking away. For any CEOs listening, you know, you didn't hear it from us. I mean, all we know, right, is that it's possible, it's feasible to see that not only could they do that, but you can plainly understand the incentive process that would lead to that kind of behavior if a person were so motivated and were so morally inclined. And I think that's the major takeaway for me here. If we talk about, you know, the way that our system operates, the way that we expect for motivations to work in this system, you know, you brought up the invisible hand of the market earlier. And, you know, in some ways that can apply just as much to, you know, to the, these interpersonal dealings of different individuals. The takeaway for me is there's no real solid excuse. I mean, yes, the use cases for, you know, in cases of extreme market duress, in an effort to try to preserve some kind of stability for, you know, for greater economic reasons in terms of like, you know, scope or scale, you know, maybe there's something to that. But if there's something that's going to happen, there needs to be broader disclosure. There needs to be a sensible series of responsibilities where, because essentially, I guess what I'm trying to say, you need to disincentivize this pattern of behavior, even the potential for the pattern of behavior. I mean, we see this happen all over the financial industry and all over the financial regulatory regime, in my view. The SEC fines for infractions are often too low, far too low, compared to what different businesses, banks, otherwise are able to profit off of or benefit, you know, whatever the least culpable phrasing I can use. Point being, it's clearly these things just keep happening. And we don't have the disclosure in this case to know exactly how often those things do occur. It'd be hard to prove, I think, even if you did have the disclosure, what the motivations were behind the decisions of a given board. But if we can properly disincentivize through disclosure and through transparency, risky actions that might lead to these kinds of larger systemic risk, that's going to be a good thing. And so that's a reason in my head to try to get behind this kind of effort. And I'm right there with you, Wattkan, that provided the proper context, because you know most people are not familiar at all. I've never heard of the NSCC, of course, and least of they read through and familiarized themselves with any of these rules or any of these corner cases. You know, people are far too busy for that in a general sense. But once we can provide some of this information and cite it properly and provide them an avenue to use their voice, I think that there's a really common sense approach here that you've laid out quite well in the proposal. John, what do you think?
I'm completely with you, Chives, and the proposal sentiment. Last year, on a tangent, as another SIFMU, the OCC charged with a $17 million fine from the SEC, and in their report, they uncovered that if, you know, as Wattkan talks about, if a clearing member fails, I just want to make sure we understand how mammoth the impact of that is, because this report from the SEC last year said that if two or more clearing members failed during this investigation, then potentially the entire OCC could go bankrupt, and then every options contract in America would be null and void. And so it's a real massive implication here. And to think that the executives of these critical financial infrastructure corporations that operate for profit shouldn't be held accountable is just absurd. And to think, as Wattkan referenced, that we're going to wait until the Enron happens to have executive liability for such a fundamental part of our markets, it's absurd. What do you guys think?
I think I actually know what you might be referring to there, John. So funny thing is, just 2 weeks after this sneeze, the OCC jumped in to change their loss allocation waterfall. Wow. With the SEC, right? Now, let me be clear on this. 2 weeks after the GameStop sneeze, the OCC goes to the SEC and says, hey, if we're going to take a loss, or if a clear member is about to fail, we want to insert ourselves into the loss allocation waterfall so that we have skin in the game, and we'll be first to pony up. And the reason that they gave for that was actually somewhat reasonable. You know, the OCC wanted to basically say, hey, we want to have skin in the game so that we're going to make this a fair market, right? We're going to do the right thing and prevent members from having losses. And it's kind of a seems reasonable, right? And the SEC said, sure. Now, a couple years later, the OCC, the same OCC, goes in and says, well, yeah, it turns out if a clearing member fails, and then, well, we have to take a hit. We, the OCC, have to take a hit. That's going to suck for us because we don't actually have that much money set aside for paying out losses. And then if our resources get exhausted, we're going to need to call on other clearing members. And if other clearing members exhaust their resources, it's just going to cause a chain reaction. Right, it's going to be a cascade of clearing member failures if one of the big ones go down, and that's insane to me that these happened basically so soon after the GameStop sneeze. It's like they saw it, they saw the writing on the wall, and then they tried to jump in, knowing that they are the only clearing agency for options, right? The entire market for stock options is cleared by them. And if they go down, and this puts them in a unique position because as the only clearing agency for options, it's basically a hostage situation. Help us or your entire options market disappears when we go down.
I mean, that's unbelievable. Wow. And just for some context to give you, Chives, I'll just put that based on last year's annual report, the amount of margin that they hold themselves versus the securities outstanding. And when I say themselves, I mean for all of Wall Street. So the amount of margin that they hold on behalf of all the brokers and exchanges is less than 2% of the value of these contracts.
Well, the amount of derivative equity that we're talking about in the broader market, you know, it's even that 2%, I'm sure that's not a small sum, but it's a small blip as compared to the larger issue that they would be, threatening. And that hostage situation is an evocative, metaphor that you've drawn there. Absolutely. What can.
Yeah. If you include the entire market of derivatives, then it gets down to less than 0.03%. So it's extremely risky on that front, Chives.
Let's see. I know that we've got Burr Capital here, who's requested to speak. If you don't mind just waiting a moment, I just want to make sure that we get, cover everything we wanted to with the proposal, and then we'll get you up to ask any questions. Okay. Thanks so much to Burr Capital for that. What else would you want to cover? And we kind of, took as much of a bird's eye view as was reasonable, I think. The documents only, I say only, but it's a pretty dense 6 or 7 page read. I definitely encourage folks to check it out. And I want to talk just a bit about the submission ability that we have online. Encourage folks to do that. But before I do, anything else from that petition that you wanted to make sure to highlight and ask folks to look out for or think more about?
I think people, well, first, I think it's important that people watch Big Short again. I think it's very critical to recognize that the only reason the heroes of that movie were heroes was actually revealed at the very start of the movie. It was just, they looked. And that's all that started. Those heroes, that's it. They looked. Right? They set aside their assumptions on what they thought the market was doing, and they looked deeper. And this is probably the easiest one to get into, because even though the NSCC rules, it's hundreds of pages, but the table of contents is only a few pages. And the title, right? You would never look into any rule book and see suspension of rules as the title and think, oh yeah, that's a good idea. And when you look deeper into that particular rule, it's just two paragraphs. And it's not a hard read, it's a 2-minute read. And then you say, okay, this sounds nuts. And then you say, okay, well, let's look at this petition, right? And a lot of people think, oh, petitions, it's so hard. As it turns out, it's not that hard. It is, the SEC will tell you on their site, just send them an email. And this is where I think the YDRS site is great, because you've made it so that the template is there, it's ready. You can click, it'll copy it into your computer's clipboard, and then you hit paste into your email client, and you can hit send, and that's it. Right? That's how hard it is to petition the SEC on this one. It's sending an email, an email that is 80-90% written for you already. You just got to fill in the blanks in your email client. And then I think after that, the question is, well, if this is so bad, what other bad things are there, right? And let's start fixing those. And I could use the community's help on this, right? I haven't read the entire 300 pages, and I don't need to. If everyone's reading a few pages here and there and just calling out what's looking funny, and we can start from there, right? We can start making sure that everyone in our financial system is playing by the same rules and playing by fair rules, and not just fair for them, but fair for everyone. And I think that's a key thing, is not fair for some and but fair for all.
A 100%. And you know, thank you for shouting out some of the tools that we've built there. I mean, we're so happy to be able to offer some easier options, because we do know that it's difficult. You know, it is intimidating, I guess, to begin. I mean, so many folks, I always will say, they are aware that there are problems. It's easy to tell, looking at the market structure, looking at how people are living day to day. You can tell that there are problems, but to put real body to those are difficult, and to understand those underlying machinations are difficult. But many hands can make easier work, and that's what we are trying to do with a community guided and holistic volunteer initiative with YDRS and with community members like everyone here, everyone who is active on our Discord or our Lemmy or our GitHub account, and who are listening to this podcast today and in the future. I just really appreciate everyone for donating what they can, if it's their curiosity to keep learning, or if it goes even further and they want to contribute to everyone else's knowledge. I mean, that is really, really terrific. And that's what makes retail so strong. A bunch of diverse perspectives and you know, people who have developed a self-interest in, you know, spreading this kind of granular understanding. So you can stop by the website. Again, that link is in the Nest, the show notes, et cetera, to not only review this petition in full, but you can also submit it in just a couple of clicks. YDRS does not maintain or gather any information. It uses a simple mail to command. So, you know, your privacy is secured. The SEC, you know, they're ready and willing to accept these sorts of emails. And you can, of course, check out the SEC tutorials page. Sorry, SEC petitions tutorial page. We also put up, if you want to learn how to draft your own. And one thing that I definitely want to do is utilize something like our GitHub, perhaps, to encourage, you know, broader community discussion, have folks, you know, as you said, they can look at a couple of pages chosen at random out of a hat. And if something jumps out that seems like it could be a bit unfair, you know, pop it in for further discussion, get some curate conversation going, some alternate perspectives going. We can all learn a lot from that, learn a lot from each other about that, become more curious, and then, of course, eventually draft more and more pro-retail, bottom-up, you know, equity-minded rule suggestions to make for the SEC. And the collective voice for retail will only get louder over time. And that's a really exciting and terrific thing. And we're starting right here with this NSCPC petition, which, again, if you're interested in supporting that, or at least, you know, interested in learning more and reading the full text for yourself, definitely check that out as you have some time. You know, it'll be right there in the notes.
Yeah, I'll second that. That's tremendous. I'm completely with you there, Chives. And yeah, I mean, we've got this really incredible little section of the rules that we can change here with tremendous reasoning. But I completely agree with what both of you said on this idea of decentralizing and giving people a little, you know, just being able to go and work on this little part of it, or, you know, understand this micro section of the rules that they have. And then having that discussion based on that, it 100% seems like a real direct shot into building sort of the most convincing argument based on the wisdom of everyone and not just no one. So on that assumption, I'm going to do that for the letter that we've been working on this year for the transfer agent regulations and the DTCC bailout, and definitely be a chance to showcase what we can do together.
Definitely agree with what both of you are saying. And I'll emphasize that last part of what John said, right? Together, retail can make a difference. It's not one person. And it's actually, we should keep in mind that even though we see singular industry entities making efforts to change the rules, there are tens, if not hundreds of people behind that entity that are paid to read and craft rule changes for those industry participants. So it is not retail shouldn't look at this and say, it's too big for me. I think retail should look at this and say, together, we can do this because we are many more than the tens or hundreds of people at an industry institution, right? There are many more retail people, and it is in our interests to have a market that is fair for us.
Right. It's not just in the collective interest, but in the individual interest as well. If you're someone who, you know, directly or indirectly is involving your equity in the market, then you're going to want that market to treat you fairly. And that goes for not only these big dogs, but, you know, every individual retail investor and every group of retail investors that, you know, are starting to gather and starting to increase their understanding. So it's a really wonderful time to have the opportunity, you know, thanks to these tools that, you know, provided by the SEC in terms of us being able to publicly solicit rules for change to comment on the proposals. And of course, using community platforms all over the internet to, you know, work together and to develop that kind of community. I just really appreciate, you know, everyone that's here now, both of you guys for the incredible work that you do, and everything that we'll be doing in the future. I think it's just the start of all of that. So on that note, I think that we have covered it pretty well, and I'm sure lit some fires, got some folks interested to check this out, to submit some petitions, either this one or others in the future. And I would love to hear from anyone in the audience now who is curious to speak or ask any questions. There was the fella Burr earlier. I don't see them in the list now, but I'll send him a quick DM. And certainly anyone else listening in the meantime, would love to have you come up and speak regarding this petition or anything else on your mind.
While we're waiting on the final word on that, this last week, the community in Discord, we've been bringing more and more users onto GitHub as sort of this collaboration platform, just as a little bit more transparent and accessible place to kind of work together and craft these documents versus like a Google Drive where it's harder, you know, because you can only really share links to just edit the entire thing, and you don't really have attribution on who contributes what, so you can't really tell who does a lot of the work. It's just sort of this flat end product. Versus today we built the entire, well, we built the starting DAO site that will sort of be the host framework for how to, you know, how the community can come in. And it's been really inspiring to see, you know, people create their first GitHub accounts, open their first change requests and contribute actively to simple, you know, you just write down stuff and we're just, you know, building things together. I think what can, we were talking a little bit, and I know a lot of the work you do is on Reddit. What do you think about these more open platforms for working together and doing just like simple markdown collaborations?
I look forward to collaborating with YDRS, with you, John, and with others. Like I know on Reddit there's like a Kibble Pigeon and Dismal Jellyfish. There's a number of us that are collaborating, whether it be through Google Docs, Google Drive, Google, or, you know, just in chat rooms, right? Discord. I think GitHub is a great place to have the tracking system in place. I think GitHub is, you know, as a, coming from sort of an engineering background, I think GitHub's great. It is, I think, potentially difficult for someone not familiar with GitHub to jump in to something like that. Whereas I think anybody can jump into, you know, like a text editor of some sort and be able to type. I think most people are capable of doing that. Markdown is also one of those things where I know a lot of people in the tech industry would be familiar with. Personally, I'm actually not that familiar with Markdown myself, but I know it's not that hard to do, right? So I like it. There's pros and cons. I know Reddit is where a lot of the audience goes to, which makes it for a very simple place to start, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. But, I'm with you there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think, you know, as we get more sophisticated about this, I think we're going to find better ways of collaborating. And one of the problems with collaboration here, I would say, is actually anonymity, right? When people design products, they didn't really design anonymous collaborators into the picture, because that never, I don't know that anybody ever thought that a bunch of random people who don't know each other and don't really want to know each other get together to put something together, right? Like that's, you know, if you'd ever pitch that as a business idea, I think people would be like, eh? And I think that's probably the number one problem that plagues most of the options, right? Even GitHub. GitHub requires you to kind of have your login, track your user and whatnot, right? I mean, yeah, you'd have to go create an anonymous user, but, you know, collaboration has generally assumed the collaborators know each other or have, right, getting together for some purpose. And this is kind of a different form of collaboration, which I think it makes it difficult to find a good platform, because there is no platform designed for us. But that doesn't stop us from collaborating.
Yeah.
I think those are strong points, and they're items that we will continue, I think, to grow around and to kind of work on. I think the incorporation of DAO and blockchain technologies, part of the kind of the inciting incident in some ways for doing that was to enable exactly what you were just alluding to. You know, there's a recognition, I think, that although folks, which, you know, and this is wonderful, although folks, you know, they want to give, they want to help, they want to be part of the community, they're, of course, because this is ultimately having to do so much with an individual's like financial standing and self-sufficiency, independence, these very personal things, you know, naturally there ends up being plenty of folks that, like, for example, you know, I obviously will not name names, but there are plenty of collaborators that I've worked with for DRSGME or for YDRS who have never been active in any of our public community environments. But I can tell you that these individuals are, you know, from around the world and help in incredible ways, but do not desire to, you know, to risk being any more associated than, I guess, having, you know, a handful of individuals just know that they do good work. And while that's incredible, going through a central cog, like, you know, someone like me to facilitate that is far from ideal. And, it'll be terrific if we, as we are able, I should say, cause I don't want to use an if, I believe it's absolutely possible in an eventuality that we take advantage of modern advances in technology to enable more and more of that kind of comfortable contribution for those who desire it, without needing to incorporate, you know, trusting a single fault point, like myself in this example. So I mean, that's my personal connection to it. Naturally, I'm a bit more forward facing, but I'm comfortable with that, but a lot of folks are not. And I, you know, and there are tons of incredible people, out there that, you know, that want to be able to contribute, I'm sure, that don't even want to take that kind of step, understandably. So once we have a more transparent and equitable way to improve access and community development, I mean, that's really going to be terrific. And I think that we'll get there in due time. So on the subject of Burr Capital, the fellow that was here earlier. I was just about to mention that they DM me some questions. As it seemed, they had to leave, but it looks like they're back listening now. So welcome back. I can send over you an invite to speak, so you're able to ask those questions yourself. Because I was just about to ask, operate as intermediary and ask them for you.
I mean, case in point.
Right, exactly. It relates directly to what I was just saying, I think.
since you have that insight while we're waiting for Burr to come up as a speaker, do you guys think that what we just talked about with enabling privacy and, you know, autonomous contributions that aren't, you know, linked to any person in the real world, you think that's possible with a centralized platform like GitHub, or does everything need to be stored on chain on IPFS and completely ownership-less on the server side?
It's a good question. I mean, I think that it's possible, you know, for example, for someone can make like a dummy email unrelated to themselves and only navigate to it securely and have their GitHub account associated with that and, you know, and pair that to, you know, like a GAO governance, you know, sort of, you know, token, you know, checklist. You know, I could see that the hoops are there if someone wants to jump through them from, you know, from my understanding. I think that it is possible. Now, is that the, you know, is that like the ideal solution, like the kind of very skeleton framework I just described? Probably not, but that's something that can be improved over time. And the thing about those kind of hoops is that they're there, right? They're optional. They're there. As long as we can help people understand how to utilize those sorts of tools to maintain as much of their anonymity as they are comfortable with, while also being able to contribute as much to the community as they're comfortable with, then I think that we're in very good shape. What do you think, Joaquin?
I think we'll get there, and I think the work that you both have been doing have been instrumental in starting us down those paths. This is new, right? We are new, I should say. Retail's never organized in this fashion before, and I'm very excited to see where we're going to head and how we're going to evolve. So all I know is there's a lot of people who are interested in contributing. There's a lot of different ways to contribute. And we're going to find our way, right? And that's exciting to me.
There you go. Us too. And speaking of contributions, hey, Burr, welcome to the show. What did you want to ask? I'd love to have you. Thank you so much.
Chives, thank you very much for having me up. And John, and what can I make? Thank you very much for your thoughtful dialogue. And I found it extremely helpful. I believe today is more about broad strokes, but, you know, more nuanced, right? If you think about the SRO does and potentially being an illegal monopoly and a consolidation of power, you know, can an SRO whose largest members with the controlling interest are the largest investment banks, broker dealers, member owners of the DTCC and so forth, can you actually get a fair judgment if you have to go to mediation? What everyone signs in the CRA is to force mediation. You keep grievances out of the public in the court system for reflection and review. You know, is those two ideas compatible? And then if you want to answer that, I have a few, you know, minor things to say about the options market, potentially settling and clearing, but, and I caught the very end about it, you know, the last part of a DAO and why that does solve some problems. In the finer points, it does complicate a few things, but I got a little bit of range, but thank you very much for allowing me up and ask a few questions.
Thank you for the questions. I actually think that retail can push for the transparency to get the change that we want and to level the playing field, right? You said a lot of the disputes, a lot of the issues are, they try to handle them back rooms.
Yeah, so we'll just say internally to be politically correct.
internally works, right? But one thing that the SEC recognizes, and this comes up in the petition, is that information asymmetry leads to less efficient markets, right? And this is proven. The SEC recognizes it. They know it. And yet, every part of our financial system tries to create information asymmetries, right? We see that everywhere, right? Short reporting. Shorts have never wanted to report their positions because they can profit off of hiding their positions, trying to do things. I mean, right? Look at what Andrew Left just got dinged with, right? He would come out, say something, never report his positions, and then ditch his position as soon as he became public with what he was reporting. And it's in, and that's a prime example of an information asymmetry that leads to an inefficient market. So as retail finds opportunities to reduce those information asymmetries, right, to take things out of the back room, so to speak, to handle things externally in the public view rather than handling everything internally, as we're being politically correct, I think we can make those changes, right? Retail can demand those changes. Now, I think you had other questions, but I hope that answered your question. But you had some other stuff you wanted to bring up too, and Chives, yeah, and John should jump in.
It's all on the same thing. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Chives.
Oh no, that's all right. I guess I just wanted to make sure that I kind of understood correctly where you were coming from. So your concern, and if I'm understanding it right, I think this is a completely fair concern, but these SROs, the self-regulating organizations, are so massive, so influential, and the regulatory bodies, which do have some semblance of oversight in terms of the rules that they have on their books, not necessarily how they interpret or, you know, enact those rules. But, you know, we know the SEC, groups like FINRA, that there are some, you know, we understand that there's some questionable ability, perhaps. And you're concerned, I think, is it reasonable even to expect that we can incite positive change from a retail perspective when things are this far gone? And if that's correct, I mean, I think not only do I agree with what Can had posited just a moment ago, but I feel that regardless of whether or not the answer to your question is, you know, yes, it's still possible, or no, you're right, it's not possible, we still need to, I think, go through these motions and force the regulatory bodies to have the public record to show plainly that they are receiving these concerns from the retail investor population that represents a huge chunk of activity and equity in the market. And even if that does not force accountability today, it makes accountability tomorrow that much easier. And so, you know, the best day for advocacy is, you know, is today. The next best day is tomorrow, and so on, as we continue to seek to make these gigantic, make these changes in this gigantic superstructure of a system. You know, it's going to take some time, but I certainly anticipate that you're throwing a rock in a pond, and those ripples are going to spread out from there.
Yeah, you know, I completely agree with everything you said, but from a very nuanced perspective. And thank you both for your answers. It's going to be very, very tough for retail to get a fair stake. The consolidation of power is so massive at the top. You know, much like the S&P 500, if I may make a quick analogy, is that, you know, seven stocks make over, you know, 70% of returns, and, you know, stock 498 doesn't really matter in all reality. The small broker dealers, the small investment firms, go bankrupt by having an SEC letter or some kind of punitive damage, and then you add on a couple six-figure fee for attorney and litigation. I mean, the small broker dealers can't compete because they're such a tiny member of the SRO. But if you go to the top heavy end of the spectrum, the same four or five names that continually come up that probably carry 90% of the risk, you know, they get a $50,000 fee, and, you know, life goes on. So even at the institutional level, I guess I would say, equal justice is far and few between. And through the current SRO framework, maybe I'm less optimistic, but no, there's no doubt, Jives, that progress is very slow. And I think a lot of retail doesn't understand, how the bureaucracy works. And just I'll be pontificating a bit on that front. And to carry that over to the same kind of risk calculation, same with the OCC and the options clearing, to me, the problem with those markets is, hey, it's a casino. The OCC is now, or there's the market's now 4 to 6 times larger than the underlying assets. I mean, they're literally manipulating the shares. No one's even forcing the locates. I mean, setting and clearing is a separate issue, but I mean, how are they securitizing or collateralizing their positions if it's already overfloated than the underlying asset? I mean, the OCC had no other option to say we're going to take first loss because, well, without it, they're done. Just by the mechanism, it's already too large for its own good.
I think you hit it right on the head there, Burr, on so many things. I know we were talking a little on the OCC earlier and how they had that options monopoly. And I just want to circle it back to what Wutkan wrote about here for the NSCC rules, because it's basically, as Chive said, the exact same thing, but for every single stock and with the FICC bond, but every single equity security is basically through them, which is, it's really unbelievable. And if you want to say something on that, Wutkan, feel free to jump in.
Go ahead, finish your thought, and I'll jump in afterward.
It's sort of a two-part thought. So the second thing is what Burr said, and I don't know if he explicitly meant this, but about the way that these SRO, and this is the way that the SROs handle disputes. This is a really big part of the comment letter I referenced at all, and I'll upload the source documentation and the references and everything here so everyone can kind of understand. Or at least I can write about it, and there's like primary sources. This is like a serious challenge because the SROs came about in the 1920s when Wall Street was an insider's club, right? The only people there, they knew each other. It was small enough that they could regulate themselves. And if you had a problem, you went to the other millionaire next to you and you worked it out that way. But that is not our market today. The industry now is you and me. It's hundreds of millions, billions of people affected by the choices of these central intermediaries. And the SRO superstructure does not effectively give the insights, oversight, and power to the investing public. It doesn't give it to us at all. And it's not working for intermediaries.
Well, so, and they litigated it through the CRAs, right? I mean, you're abiding to their rules. So after the fact, you don't even have any true power to litigate. You don't go to the public court system by a jury of your peers. You go to a back room with 3 FINRA employees, and I'm not going to comment on how I think they rule, but yeah, it subverts due process if you believe injustices or grievances were incurred.
It entirely subverts due process. It appoints Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2 of executive appointment, because these FINRA judges are not, they have no authority from the government, even though they operate in a liminal government proposition. And there's a case going to the Supreme Court from the Fifth Circuit called Alpine Securities that's against FINRA that will directly charge this exact item and potentially rule these SROs unconstitutional, just like the DTCC or the NSCC.
Well, privately, I'm rooting for that. I've been paying attention to the Alpine story, and I'm very, very eager to see what they say. And much like the Chevron case, it could really start to shift legislative reaches, we'll say.
I agree with both all of you are saying. I think there's going to be interesting changes in our market over the next few years, decade, just to recognize how slow bureaucracies can move, right? I mean, after 2008, we had a huge bailout. None of these rules changed to prevent another bailout.
right? And this is not, it's not appropriate for this club, but they've kind of been bailing out everybody since 2019. I mean, you put $4 trillion in the economy, that's kind of backdoor bailouts.
Yeah.
They have been, but, right?
Yeah.
And you know, I always like to go back to incentives, right? I would say after 2008, what everyone on Wall Street learned was you can get a bailout to pay for, to clean up your mess. And since then, I think more people on Wall Street have learned it is just much more profitable to create messes and get bailed out. And that's why you see, you know, more bailouts, especially in the past few years, over and over again. It's simply more profitable, right? Why try to do business and actually succeed when you can just create a mess and walk away and collect the profits while you do so?
I think I heard a little bit earlier. I mean, everything's a contraparty risk, and you gotta really give respect to the guys that are in control. I mean, you're playing against and legislate against or trying to put proposals in front of on different ways to maybe self-regulate or transparency or disclosure. But these guys have the ability to almost change the rules in real time, assuming that they even apply. And I agree with everything you guys are doing. I'm very thankful that you're taking this on, you know, but in the event Alpine does kind of go towards the way of retail, saying maybe they're even unconstitutional SROs, I mean, isn't the maybe the next path, and this is hypothetical, but isn't maybe the next path a competing SRO, a competing framework, duality for retail consumers to have a different venue to, you know, issue or trade or invest? I mean, is the juice worth the squeeze to try to fix what could be, in just my humble opinion, an insurmountable problem, potentially?
This is one of the things I like about blockchain and decentralized systems. I think we're seeing a transition in the market to, and I don't want to use the term alternative trading system because that's actually a term in the system, but there's
markets. That's a very legal term.
That's a very heavily over. But
yes,
there are alternatives that are being developed, right? And crypto and blockchain are, in essence, they're a response to the current system as is, right? There are issues in the current system as is because they've been able to write the rules as they see fit. And people would rather have a codified set of rules that are immutable, that can't change, that are hard-coded. Right.
Well, I think we're seeing evidence of that, right? The IPO machine is broken, right? There's a couple of different reasons, I think, for that, but no one's going public. And if you did have a very successful business, and this is actually, you know, the exchange's problems, the SEC's problem, the custodial's problems, they maybe have done enough damage by themselves where people will choose not to do business with them. I don't know if that's fixable. Because they mandate so much, it's so political, you lose complete control of your, not only your business, your shares, you can get manipulated. You have the derivatives that can manipulate your sentiment. You have media that is completely unhinged, that can just lie out of both sides of their mouth. Why would anyone want to do business or go public with these guys? I don't see the value unless you're a debt-laden company with no future and they can get the hype machine going. But if you're a great, you know, couple billion dollar year business, what's the value prop to go forward with these guys? I think that's the real challenge right now.
I agree. And I think that's kind of what we see in the marketplace right now, right? Is a reduction in business manifesting itself as a recession that will not be labeled as a recession. But one thing I do like about the petition, ultimately, is coming back to incentives. And I think this is something that we have to keep in mind as we try to fix the market. right? The loss allocation waterfall for the NSCC and the other clearing agencies is first the company that defaulted or that created the mess, so to speak. And then it's followed actually by other clearing members, right? It is equally in their interest not to pick up the tab for someone else. And I think when you frame it that way, that you want the people who created the mess to clean it up first, or at least be responsible for cleaning it up first, I think it's much more palatable to everyone else in the market.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because the private market for businesses is exponentially larger than the public market. And you're seeing a lot of these concepts already being executed and implemented. There are plenty of private credit groups where they're in the waterfall of the first loss position. You know, they have it tranched. The only time the venue is just not public, and then you get into accredited investors and all the bureaucracy around, you know, of who can buy potentially what, you know, private business versus public, which I think is that's neither here nor there. But no, I mean, the private market in many ways is almost more self-regulating than the public markets, and I think they hide behind those large institutions. And that's just, you know, my personal opinion.
One of the big problems I see with some of the private fundraising is when they do what really should kind of be leaned more towards a public offering, because there are these statutory requirements for when you need to go public. If you have so many, if you have over 2,000 investors is kind of the big one. And it's just about accessing capital, right? And there's been a growing number of firms in the private space over the years, and more recently, that let you raise from the public, where you can sort of get a better price, you can get more capital than you might be able to get from just one or two special venture firms in certain circumstances, especially if you have like a retail facing thing, as we've seen. And they'll put like 700 investors in one SPV, and that one corporation will buy the stock and be the holder of record on the shares of the actual company fundraising. And according to the SEC and industry and just precedent, that only counts as one investor. It doesn't count as 700 investors. So if this happens a couple of times, now you're at the point where you're this massive company that's raised an inordinate amount of money from the public, but those investors do not get the public disclosure transparency benefits that are the pinnacle of our regulatory regime. And I think that as we see less people going public, that really means less protection and less quality for the growing number of investors, because there's only so many venture firms in the world. And when you get to a certain size, you're raising from the public, because venture is just an intermediary for public funds in the vast bulk of cases. And it's really interesting to see how there is, like you said, lax oversight over a lot of the private markets, which in reality function quite similar to the public structures. It's one of the big things we're aiming to solve, and a huge part of the letter two on the OCC.
Yeah, no, I think it's about venue and transparency. I mean, you could also get really nitty gritty saying, you know, the current framework, you know, are the quarterly disclosures around, you know, what the investment analyst thinks and their silly projections and what the business is doing, you know, is a 90-day benchmark the best way to assess a business to have 10, 20, 15%, you know, moves depending on a top-line number that the computer's front-running you on, you know, versus potentially taking a longer-term time horizon. But, you know, this is maybe where some DAO structures come into place, or a potential framework for real innovation on what does it really mean to be a long-term investor. Now, on the DAOs and the blockchain spaces, maybe you don't get the full derivative exposure that some people really, really enjoy. But no, I think competing venues is probably the most important thing that we can try to establish. Let these venues compete. Let transparency choose. Let let business owners state their value prop or how they're going to release books and records or do shareholder type calls. We're at the most important timeline in our history to really be extremely innovative.
Extremely innovative, yeah. What can you think blockchain can do it?
I love what you're doing with blockchain, and I think so. The technology is there. It really helps with the transparency aspects of it. And the technology is there to ensure that a lot of the problems that are in our current public system are fixed. And guaranteed, new technology, new problems. But I love what the prospects are. And I think we're at a critical juncture where we're going to see where this takes us. And I think we're going to see a lot of fun things come down and a lot of change. And it's going to be a bumpy ride. But it's going to be amazing and exciting. And I love how the blockchain technology makes it so that it can be a bridge between what the public markets that we currently have, the private markets, and making one behave more like the other with the accountability and transparency that everybody wants. Well, okay, let me take that back. Most people want. Right.
good one. Good catch. Yeah.
Blockchain is, it solves, and I'm just making numbers up, it solves, I think, about 70% of the market inefficiencies. It's not a complete solution yet, depending on the product and the solution and really what's trying to be accomplished. But it is an alternative potential solution for someone looking to access public capital. And I think the traditional legacy infrastructure should be extremely mindful, especially with cases like Chevron and Alpine that are coming through the pipeline, where it could really open the door for creativity.
Well, I think that right there is a key idea that we can keep in mind, that it enables creativity. You know, blockchain itself is an open source technology that is available for public innovation, and we are seeing that happen, in real time all around us for years already, and we'll continue to see it for many more years to come, I am sure. And that's possible, through the creativity of individuals, who see a problem, see a possible technological solution, and work real hard to try to make something happen. Right now that these spaces are vacuums, there's nothing like any of the tools that blockchain has been creating, before, just because of the nature of the technology. So we're in a good spot for all of that. And I just, I think we've had a really great conversation here, guys, not only regarding the, SEC petition, more public disclosures, more community involvement. Items I think that, blockchain has parallels to as well. But naturally, the follow-up conversation here kind of about the existing regulatory regime and whether, what it's all about when it comes to trying to change it through the available metrics that we have. I think we've been coming up on 2 hours, getting close to it. And I know Whatcan had let me know ahead of time before the show that he had about this much time today. So want to just kind of start to wrap it up. If there are any quick questions from those listeners, of course, we can try to squeeze those in. But otherwise, anyone have any kind of closing thoughts before we call it for the day?
Just Chives, thank you for allowing me up in the chat with you guys for a little bit. John, what can I make? Thank you guys very much for all the effort you guys are doing with your proposal. Thank you very much for, again, allowing me to come up and just share my opinions and get your feedback. Thank you.
Of course. Thank you for stopping in. I'm glad you were able to make it back to join by voice, and I hope to see you again. I mean, I recognize your name. You've been around, and I'm sure we'll see you around in the future.
I'm sure you guys will. Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. What about you, John?
Well, it was just really inspiring. I was going to ask Bert before he dropped out. He brought up the idea of using DAOs as a governance framework instead of these centralized SROs. And it's definitely something that I think is a really unique and specialized application that fits extremely well with the natural voting in DAOs.
Well, here, I'll reach out to him, ask about his thoughts on that, and I'm sure we'll be able to talk to him again in the future, get some more in-depth perspective, and maybe have a specific conversation about that kind of application to the technology. So it's a great shout there.
I know we had some other community questions in the Discord, and I'm working still on getting a great interview lined up for that and making sure we all can you know, work together on it.
I look forward to working with both of you. Thank you so much for the opportunity to come and talk. This is a great discussion. I want to see everyone fighting for fairer markets, right? Let's get this level playing field that we thought we had.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'm really glad to have you with us in that fight. It's been terrific, you know, just getting to know you a bit better, working together on this, and on. I'm excited to work together on future items. Really great to have you on. Thanks so much for making the time. I know it's tough to do, and you even downloaded Twitter for this. So thanks for all that extra effort as well. Really, really appreciate it, Wakan. Welcome back anytime.